Finance and Facility Committee, November 25th, here at our CSO offices. First order of business this evening, then, is to take a quick look at our minutes and make sure that they meet with your approval. Let me know that they do.
I'm good.
I'm good.
Okay, then, you know, we have two discussion topics on the agenda for this evening, and I'm going to move things around just a little bit. I'm actually going to move up the comprehensive annual financial report first, and then it'll allow you gentlemen, the balance of our meeting this evening to discuss funding in terms of how you would like to fund the proposed elementary school additions. So what you have this evening are two separate documents. You have the comprehensive annual financial report, which is a governmental entity report, which for those, for everyone here that's in business, this is an audit. This is our audit report. The second item, second document that you have here is communication to those charged with governance, essentially the Board of Education, and then management. So, the long and the short of it, I know everybody's always concerned about deficits, surpluses, fund balances, and things of that nature. Just briefly, we had projected a deficit of $1.9 million for the year ended June 30th, 2013, and that was a result of the abatement that took place a couple of years ago. And we did a great job of managing our finances, and we came in with a deficit of about $1.3 million. So there was about a $600,000 swing out of almost a $50 million budget between what we projected our expenditures to be and what our actual expenditures came in at. So I'd like to take a look at this communication document that you have here in front of you. Just walk real quickly through it to make a couple of comments regarding it. In the first area here, right past the table of contents, you've got required communication of internal control-related matters identified in the audit to those charged with governance, which is essentially the administration and the Board of Education. You have a letter that's written by the auditors to the Board of Education. And what they spoke about is that they found a material weakness in our systems of internal control financial reporting. And I would just like to say before the shock wears off your face, because I saw it. This is an item of internal control that virtually every school district in the state of Illinois is cited for. And it's because we don't have on staff accountants that prepare our financial statements for us. We allow our auditors to prepare these financial statements. And I would say a district like the Chicago Public School System, some of the other larger ones, maybe in Elgin, which has 50,000 kids and 45,000 kids, and some of the very large school districts, they probably employ accountants here. But basically what this says is that, like most school districts in the state of Illinois, the district does not maintain an external financial reporting department or function, but relies on its auditing firm for this purpose. However, the external auditor is by definition external to the auditor and cannot be part of the district's internal control structure. I'd just like to focus in on a comment. While this is defined as a material weakness by accounting standards, it may not be practical or cost beneficial for the district to mitigate this weekend.
What page are you on, Bob?
I'm on page 2.
The explanation.
Yeah. This is something that has been cited
virtually
in all of our reports since this method of, they call it the Government Accounting Standards Board, GASB, came into effect. And this has been cited previously, and as I've indicated in my past comments, this is something that's indicated on almost all school districts except for the very large ones. What it is the district, the auditors come in, they review the documentations, our trial balance, they go through our reports that we present to them, and then they render a report or an opinion based regarding their effectiveness. Everything, the audit came up clean, their recommendations are in good working order. Like I said, the only comment that they had to do really was that they come in and prepare the year-end accrual entries and things of that nature. We give them a list of accruals, but they go back and they refine it even further because they have to accrue out those that were accrued at the end of the fiscal year 2012 and then accrue in the necessary accrual for the year ended June 30th, 2013. I think they've given us once again a nice clean audit. We should be proud of our achievements here, and I feel very good about the way the audit turned out.
No miscellaneous or others?
No other comments. No other comments of any significance. There have been some minor comments they made throughout this document, but nothing of any significance. Certainly nothing that would affect the opinion they've already rendered in this document here.
For the rating of the district,
nor do they cite any issues that became apparent during the review process. So it's a clean audit, as I've stated. Their standard audit information is available here regarding two-way communication. And basically, it just sets forth what are the expectations, what should you as a board expect of your auditing firm. And that basically runs through the entire discussion that is presented in this short-form document. Now, in addition to the comprehensive annual financial report, they also perform an annual financial report. It's a short form and a long form that goes to the state of Illinois, ISB. Those documents have all been filed. All the documentations have been filed in a timely fashion, because of our outstanding bond issues, we are also required to report certain issues. I'm required to support this document or submit this document to EMMA, which is an agency that takes in all the audited financial reports of governmental institutions, particularly those that have outstanding bonds, and it provides information to any of your clients that would want information on your existing audit.
They come in here for roughly 4 months, it looks like.
They come in
6 to 12 weeks.
They will come in for 2 weeks in May, then they will come in again, and then they go. They take our trial balances, all the Excel documentation that they can provide to them, that we can provide to them. Then they go away. So they spend 2 weeks here, they gather their information, we give them what they need, and then they go away, and then basically they come back in middle to late August. It was late August, early September this year. They said they had a very busy season picking up several additional clients. So then they go away, they do the review, they come back, and then I'm required to sit with them for quite a bit of time, and I answer various questions. I'm required, they submit various comments to me, or asking for additional documentation. I then respond to them. We sit down, we have a meeting, they go away, and then that's generally about the last time that I'll see them. But then it got about the last 2 to 3 weeks of October, then I will start getting additional requests for information from the auditors, and that's when we move into the preparation of this document. That is the actual comprehensive annual financial report.
Do they ever come in and do any spot audits, unannounced?
No, that's not the role that they play in the district.
Understood.
Do we have any internal spot audits?
We do not have an internal auditing department. I spot audit checks that we write.
Yeah.
I do what I can to keep up with payroll.
Yeah.
And basically, I maintain spreadsheets down in my office that I enter financial information in every month that allows me to track, just to make sure it's like a quick review. Are my salaries in line? Are my benefits in line? Are my purchase services? Everything in line in terms of where it is in relation to a previous year's particular expenditure or revenue account. So I'll just walk real quickly through the audit report here. This is a document that obviously is assembled by the auditors with, I would consider, rather significant input for me. The introductory section is just bent generally. It's a document that I prepare that is addressed to the Board of Education and the citizens of Glen Allen School District 41. And it just walks through, there's about 10 pages. of different high points of how we go about our budgeting and our review and our relationships that we have with various government agencies. We then go into the financial section, and this is truly, it's a four-page document. This is prepared by the auditors themselves. Then we have the MD&A, which is the Management Discussion and Analysis. This is another document that I prepare. And truly, this is the highlights of all the revenue and expenditure. It's a summary of everything that's occurred, except it's in a written format versus an Excel spreadsheet. There are some charts that are helpful, just snapshots of where we are at this year versus where we were at last year. And again, it's a look at in terms of what happened this past year and what are the potential indicators of what may be happening in the future. So if we're in negotiations or we have a big ticket item that we're going out to bid for, like transportation, something that we spend several hundred thousand dollars on, that is something that would be indicated in this management discussion and analysis. It has the basic financial statements. Those are prepared by the auditors. Required supplementary information is required by the auditors. And then finally, you have the statistical section that I prepare. And basically, that's a 10-year look back in terms of all the financial highlights, if you will. It's a snapshot in time. It's a consistent application of your revenues and expenditures so that you can get a long-term perspective in terms of what's occurred. It has revenue items, expenditure items. It has taxes that are attributable to a particular source, fund balances. It has your outstanding bonds. It has your assessed valuation in regards to your estimated actual value of your taxable property. I mean, it has any number of charts, probably 20 different charts in here. Major employers within the school district, it identifies them and the contribution that they make overall, their contribution individually to the overall EAV of the district. Outstanding bonds and just basically anything that they feel that has been put together over a number of years that is a financial interest or a statistical interest to the general public.
I'm like 20 pages behind this.
So again,
I was caught up on the lack of appreciation and like in our land value at $152,000. But I understand when you get your land 100 years ago and
Well, it has to be listed at cost.
I know. I understand. So Ben Franklin's land at like, you know.
Oh, God. Who would know?
Yeah.
A chicken and half a pig.
$6.42.
Well, I'll tell you, it's interesting. The ladies in my office have brought out books that were maintained by hand in the early 1900s, and it shows all of the, you know, a teacher getting a check for $6.40 for 2 weeks' work or something like that. We maintain all those in our vault downstairs. So if you want to take a walk past
that's right.
I'm looking at a revenue source there. We can do a tour there for the kids.
Is that for the village?
Oh, all about revenue sources.
So just to give you an idea of where we're going to go with this next, I have the auditor scheduled to appear before the board as a presentation. They'll be bringing this document back to you one more time in early January, our first meeting in January. And that's typical. Well, they'll come back and they'll present this document to you. And it's your opportunity.
Give everybody warning, right?
Yeah. Maybe a couple months to
with that.
The auditors are going, you're going to pass.
You know that, right?
Yeah. You don't need to fire all these questions.
No, I'm thinking the opposite. I'm thinking a lot of people may not be here.
Yeah. That's not a night to attend.
That one can fatigue you.
Yes.
Well, I've got to tell you, this is a little bit different presentation than I've given previously. Mm-hmm. And what I've observed is that people have a tendency to gloss over what I'm giving this.
You have a lot of detail in this as well.
So, I usually present a bunch of spreadsheets. I thought I would do it a little bit differently this year. I just want to assure you that,
Thank you.
Given the independent auditor's report, all is going well. And we're proud of the organization that we have down in my offices. Okay. So we'll be in January.
All right.
More than welcome to ask any questions. But again, what you've seen here this evening are good things. There's nothing significantly negative in there.
Well, now I don't have to ask you questions on the bonds again and all that stuff.
It's all right there.
Yeah. It's on page 32.
You should have given them months ago. Brought in the auditors months ago.
Well, we update this annually.
I understand.
It's a great exercise that they put
it is.
So, are there any other questions on this? Hearing none. Then we're going to move on really to our final discussion, unless we decide to have some last minute conversation with any audit or something like that, the levy or something.
There's so much information here.
I'm almost done.
There's so much information. Maybe would it make sense to let everybody read through this at their leisure and bring up. Open up for questions for the next finance committee.
Well, as again, we're going to have the auditors presenting this to the board as a whole. That's why I've given everybody a copy of the document.
And that's theirs to take home, right? I mean, it's yours to read.
You got your name on
every night.
Yours to take home with you.
Yeah, I'm going to wait until Patrick puts all his notes on it. Then I'm
he'll steal his cliff notes.
I learned that this past weekend.
We learned Patrick's brilliant.
We have a December 9th meeting, and then the next meeting after is January.
Yeah.
And that's the meeting.
Meeting that they'll be presenting.
Okay.
That's a rather typical process of how we go through this whole audit.
And so you have roughly over a month in 2 weeks to review the information and to come back and fire at the auditors.
Okay.
I don't know if fire is.
I can see that happening. But... or ask you questions. Just to go off agenda, because I work with a bunch of people, that's all they do.
Go off agenda.
Goes off agenda. I had that one question to you in the email, and then John commented on it regarding the employee reimbursement for mileage. And I know I'm getting in the weeds here, but I was reading the check register and started seeing people going to the same place and a large difference in cost, somebody being reimbursed to go to the same place. And it seems like we don't have what I would consider a standard mileage reimbursement. If I live in Joliet and my meeting is in Springfield, and I go 100 miles to do that, it's a little more than that, but whatever. And my commute each day is 30 miles. I'm only submitting for 70 miles. Toll, and in fact, my tolls to get here, should be deducted too. And that's kind of what John said. It's a net number we should be reimbursing people for travel. So
we've had that conversation at Cabinet, and we continue to talk about what is the best way so we have a consistency, because you're right. I think it's about consistency in language,
But I want to say money, too. And
absolutely.
People travel, and I know we have $50 million of budget, but to me, it's important. Consistency is important, too. But to me, I think back in 2006, 2005, whatever, people would reimburse anybody. When people started looking at every penny, they said, why is there a difference? And if you're spending $30 to get to work each day, why am I paying you $120, or why am I paying you $30 to go somewhere else when that's a wash?
I appreciate it.
And another something I would like to bring your attention to is we have a lot of people now. My group just went down to Peoria for a conference. Mm-hmm. I'm waving over at Carolyn because she drove.
Right.
She had a van full of ladies with her.
Right.
So what we've done is we've done away from people.
And that's on record, just so you know now.
Well, they had several members of my department. Take the trip with her. Okay?
Which is a great idea.
Right. So instead of going, every person driving individually and being reimbursed for it, my team gathered up and sort of, I don't know, how many people did you have in your vehicle?
Four.
Four. Four plus you? Mm-hmm. So we're five people in our
vehicle.
So
proof, no doubt.
Yeah. I have a big van?
Yes, I do.
Nope, truck.
But in the minivan.
I think that's prudent. I mean, that's exactly what should occur, and I appreciate you guys doing it that way. I just So
no, I think it's good for conversation for us to have.
Every trip, it's, you know, people commute to work. I mean, Bobby, your commute's not that far, but, you know, some people have a long commute to work. And if it's public transportation and they spend $10, then that $10 should be deducted from what they're reimbursing. It shouldn't be a profit center for them.
And I agree. Perfect.
I believe that some of the travel from a policy standpoint, I think Paul is that on, it's on the docket to be
reviewed,
defined and reviewed. And
yeah, we're looking at some language from cabinet level to bring to the policy committee.
Okay.
Because we're seeing.
I think that'll define your issue.
And that's why I did some studying on the last chapter.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
I put the two and two together.
Yeah.
I understand. I remember that being the point. So I started reading the reimbursements.
And you also saw the email that I sent you. There was a sizable expenditure that the check was just written for $16,000 for boilers. And that was, it's an annual occurrence.
I was glad to hear that.
Yeah, it has to be done every year. The boilers are completely broken down, taken apart, and reassembled where they check for gas leaks or anything else. So that's typical for that type of expenditure during the summer.
You got a nice carry on that, too. Because the summer expense would have been billing you a long time ago.
You're absolutely right.
I hear you. That's why it surprised me, because the timing didn't work.
Yeah.
Anyways, 7 o'clock, ladies.
Okay.
Let's go back to the major
test. Well, really, then, this evening is really about the Finance Committee. And having the ability to have some time to discuss financing alternatives for the proposed additions at the elementary buildings. Now, we've estimated hard cost, and about the hard cost, meaning those that will we can expect to receive from when the bids come back, of something in excess of $12 million. The administration has made a commitment to funding that other $1 million, whatever that number is going to turn out to be, funding that through ongoing operations. So really, I think this evening's conversation is, you know, we've talked about 50-50, 60-40. You know, I mean, we could look at it a lot of different ways, but you're essentially looking, what is your recommendation going to be? Because we're going to have to get to that conversation and make a decision. I'm going to say probably right after the first of the year, we're going to have to make a commitment. And what I would look for is the Finance Committee to have a conversation here, and I don't say that we need to walk away with the recommendation this evening, but we have to be prepared to make a recommendation in early January.
I think now, by December, that meeting in December, I think this team should be pretty solid in what recommendation they'll be bringing forward for the January, I think it's the 9th meeting.
Yeah. Which is the first meeting in January.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've made a recommendation based upon you know, my professional expertise. I've heard your comments, and I hear everyone's comments, and I think now it's appropriate for this committee to have a conversation in terms of what they would like to see the district commit to borrow, not to borrow, how much to borrow, whatever that case may be.
And just to recap, the administration felt like we were comfortable in that $7 to $9 million range with fund balance.
Right. And, you know,
$7 to $9 million as a fund balance and then finance the rest?
Correct.
So you were at 30% lending, borrowing, and then the rest?
Yeah, we're at $12 million in expenses. Whatever that comes
right.
back at, I would be comfortable with making a recommendation of between $7 and $9 million. With the deficit that we ran last year, again, because of the abatement, our fund balances are something in excess of $17.5 million. I'd like to maintain a fund balance of $9 or $10 million. So however that all shakes out, now you have good solid financial data that you can use to base your decision.
Can we ask you some questions?
Yeah, sure.
Because there was presentations by two firms, MBC, the one that we were leaning to, it appeared, I don't want to try to put words in people's mouths, but just saying, have they come back to you with any was there any negotiations going on?
Well, you know, they have both come back to me to see where the project stands. I don't know that we're ready to negotiate until
the board.
They've already come back with revised proposals.
Right.
But until we get a commitment, A, we're going to do the work and how much we're going to borrow versus use of our existing fund balances. I don't say there's the ability to sit down and have some hardcore negotiations.
But did they come back to you with any guidance? I mean, when I'm in these negotiations, usually, right, Drew, there's some guidance of where the lender's taking you. If you guys only borrow $3 million, you know, our interest rate's going to be a little higher, and here's where it's kind of going to be at a spread. Because they're going to quote you a spread. They're not going to, because...
They have not done that.
And then it's okay.
Because we haven't set it on a percentage of split. I think we need to get that split from you guys to say, where are you at? And where's your percentage?
That, well, I mean, it changes your mind when you know what what your delta is on a spread. I mean, if they say, if you guys are above $5 million, our spread's going to be 20 basis less, and this is the reason why, that's important. I mean, that happens every day when bankers are negotiating with borrowers. And Drew's a banker, and I'm a borrower. So this is a normal negotiation. So that guidance to me is important. The other thing I believe is very important, and this was definitely discussed in the 113 presentation for the referendum, was a draw schedule. Now, we are anticipating two projects being this summer and then two the following summer.
Well, there's also the potential for us to do some site work at all four sites. So really, the next couple of months are pretty crucial in terms of how we're going to put this whole plan together. And we have FQC. They are currently putting together some financial projections in terms of what they feel our needs will be over the next couple of years.
That's critical. That draw schedule is critical to however we're financing this. Because if we finance X number of bonds, we may be doing it in two parts.
Correct.
And if we're doing it in two parts, that may change your pricing.
Yeah. And I may not be doing it until this summer or the following spring or something along those lines, too.
I want to give a recommendation on the 9th, so you know, but that type of information... Mm-hmm. Knowing what your draw schedule is, knowing what the lender tells you is a differential in spread based on what's the likelihood of your draw schedule, then changes the ultimate borrowing that you may or may not do.
And I think that's all great information to us to have as we continue to have these conversations in terms of coming down with a final recommendation.
Okay.
No, the only thing I was going to say, when you say the 9, you want to have reserves of $9 million.
I would like to be able to maintain a fund balance of around $9 to $10 million, which would mean we would commit, if we have 17.5, we would commit to funding something between 17.5. The difference between 17.5 and a $9 million. So that's
okay. And I guess my question is, by policy, we're not. Our fund balances are not. They're not supposed to be less than
25% of the following year's next year's operating expenditures. That was a policy that was put into effect a couple of years ago per board request. And you know, that's something that we can go back and annually review. That policy also says that there's not to be in place a structural deficit. But if the administration comes back and makes a recommendation to the board to fund a particular project, such as a capital expenditure, we can always take a look at that policy.
Right. I guess my question is, if we're left with $9 million in fund balances, how does that equate to the 25%?
Just round dollars. If you have $45 million in expenditure and you take $9 million of that, that's 20%.
Okay.
So that's 20% of fund balances.
Okay.
And I've got to tell you, that was a conversation that was occurring during a time four years ago, where the district was accumulating significant fund balances, $1.5 million, $2 million, $2.5 million a year. Those days are gone. Okay, they're gone because of increased expenditures. And we've had some significant economic effects over the past 4 or 5 years where we have lost the ability to levy to the type of dollars that we had previously. We have seen our levy as low as 0.1%, which garners the district approximately $400,000 just based upon the previous year's levy for CPI at 0.1%. And it's averaged, you know, it was it's going to be 1.78 for this year's levy. CPI came out last within the past week to 10 days, maybe 2 weeks. CPI for the month of October decreased 0.2%, so right now we're tracking at 1.7% for the year that we'll use for the following year's levy. So those days, and also we don't have the new construction that we were having at that time, as well as the significant increases in EAV. So three major factors. I look back 7 years ago, we were doing $30 million a year in new construction. EAV was going up 5 or 6% annually, and CPI was running at 2.5-3.5%. We don't have those economic conditions in place like we did a number of years ago.
Patrick, what were you?
Are we capped at those levels? Do we have a cap? I think somebody I would mirror in that same conference call. Are we capped?
We are a capped district. Okay. We are a capped county, which means that we can only use the lesser of CPI
right.
or 5%.
Right.
Okay. So yes, the capped counties are the collar counties of the metropolitan area. I believe there's five of them, and
okay.
we are in a capped county.
And are we capped under how we, and I'm all trying to get this all together in my head, are we capped under how we level in each category?
Levy.
10, 20, 30, 40.
The funds, 10,
yeah.
20, that's the Ed, O&M,
mm-hmm.
transportation,
mm-hmm.
debt service. There are caps in each one of those funds. However, I can go in.
Yeah, you can juggle.
I can,
yeah.
I can
we,
move those
we?
Numbers around.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm still capped on the bottom line.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
My cap is will be 1.7%
mm-hmm.
of last year's levy, which is the CPI, plus any new construction, and then the changes in
yeah.
EAV that occur.
Okay. Are we getting close to our cap on the 10, 20, 30s that are, I'm just throwing those numbers out there, that are tied to the rating agency's look at our balances?
Well, I don't know that you can. I don't know that you can really ask that question. I would say, and I don't mean it like that. I mean it
don't
in terms
me.
Of, are you capped with regards to what is the total rate, that you can use
mm-hmm.
within a particular fund? So, you know, the education fund may be 3.5%. O&M may be 0.5%. Transportation can be something different. Because of the changes in EAV, you know, we had that conversation in that presentation 2 weeks ago. When you have decreasing EAV, it's forcing
yeah.
up those rates. So, yes, there is. Do I ever think it'll happen? No, I don't.
Okay.
We did a calculation a couple of years ago, and the number that we came up with was that EAV would have to go from, you know, EAV's gone from almost $1.5 billion down to $1.2 billion, $208 million now. And I think it's even a little less than that.
Okay.
That. Those shifts in the EAV value are what's moving those rates around. So I believe we did some calculations a couple years ago, and it was that our EAV would have to crash to almost $800 million. For it to force up the rate so significantly that we would be
okay.
hitting those captive
okay.
Brackets.
One of the things I kept hearing pounded into the conversations and some of the things that we went to and the last one I went to on analytics, protect, and this is changing my, glad I went to those things because it's changing my scope a little bit. Protect your ratings. Protect your board ratings,
right.
And those board ratings are based on certain balances of
fund
your
balances.
10, 20, 30s. It's not your core, it's other things.
Well, those are out of, I can only, first of all, we only levy 0.0001% in tort and working cash.
Yeah.
We made a decision a couple of years ago to do that.
But my comments aren't to how we're leveling that. My comments are around a question that I want to ask of. I'm going to go on the side of, I wanted to fund this whole thing out of funds and no borrowing none. That's changed now because, hey Patrick, if you borrow everything, you're going to affect your fund balances, which are going to affect your ratings, which are going to affect phase two if you want to issue bond ratings. So I want to
protect that.
you want to protect that, but I want to balance it against the conversation Joe and I always have, the interest rates, the spread, the step schedules that we want to draw about that. So if we are at a cash cushion on the, again, I use the 10, 20, 30s, that allows us to, maybe that dictates how much we self-fund, because we don't want to jeopardize the rating agents. I want to borrow what we can out of our fund balances, but I don't want to jeopardize phase two financing possibilities. Interest rates on the table, they are, but we got it from everything I heard and talking to several people after the conference. We have to protect those ratings. And
you want to spend out of existing fund balances an appropriate amount for the proposed additions.
And that's why we recommended 7 to 9 million and 9 at the high, because we want to keep our high rating, which then, you're absolutely right, would go to our referendum and how much the percentage they would charge us because of them. But currently we're under the highest rating possible with our fund balance. Yeah, so you're absolutely right.
I just want to lay out some of the stuff we laid out before and add some of what Patrick and I saw and what I saw at another session. It's key to me, one thing, just philosophically, we're at a historically low interest rate environment. We end up having to borrow at higher interest rates later. I'm going to kick myself every day I get my tax bill. And my neighbor should kick me every day they get their tax bill. Interest rates could go down. I understand that. But I understand what was presented to us over and over again in those two presentations. I know it myself and what I do on a daily basis. You guys know it. We saw it again at the workshop. So to me, I really think it's a mistake now to borrow in this interest rate environment. Now, other reasons. Now, what cap do you have? I look at the $10 million cap because of the bonds. Of course, we could do this over 2 years the way our... So we could end up doing it all. I'm not proposing all. My proposal would be close to $10
million. $10 million out of fund balance?
No, I'm borrowing. Because that fund balance is very important for two reasons. One, Patrick articulated what is very important on our rating. But now we go to the second phase. Are we going to need fund balance for our second phase? I'm going to say absolutely yes. Not maybe, not no, absolutely yes. We have to have skin in the game. Where are we going to get that skin in the game? What if we need acquisition? That is, could be. This board's looked at acquisition before. Is it easier to do a referendum pre-acquisition, or have the referendum, have the acquisition be part of the referendum? That is a hornet's nest.
It's always easier to do a referendum if you already own the property.
Right, or you have it under contract for a period of time, which you can do it, but that's going to be very difficult anyways, and you'd have to do that with your referendum. And then you're showing everybody your hand on your referendum who owns the land, what occurs. So about the only thing you lose is if there's somebody who's a group who has the land, they could promote the referendum with you, so you lose a partner in the referendum. But that's minor in the scheme of things. So to me, and this came through in District 113's presentation, they lost the first time around. They had no skin in the game. They ended up putting skin in the game, and they did it through their operating fund. That's how they chose to do it. There's various ways to do it. The more options you give yourself to do it, the more likely you're going to come up with a scenario that's successful and not failure. So to me, those are key contributing factors. As long as we can afford the bond payments, on what level is that? Is that $8.5 million? Is that $9.5 million? For me, I want to stay under the 10.
That to me is the most important piece around it. How much can we afford? And we've looked at a couple scenarios that, you know, I think we looked at. They showed us the 7 and the $10 million.
Yeah, 5, 7.5, and 10 million.
Yeah, and 7, quite honestly, is putting us out there.
Of borrowing 7.
Of using our operating to pay back.
Let's get our terms.
Yeah.
So we're all in the same. So when we talk about how much we would like to use, we're talking about how much do we want to borrow.
Talking borrowing.
Yeah. Yes.
The other funds we already have access to.
Yeah.
But how much can we borrow?
But the figures that you guys were calculating is something that Joe, you and I heard
right.
qualified rates? Were they qualified bank rates?
They were bank qualified
yes.
rates.
Yes.
Right. These ones that we got were
the
bank
MB.
They were bank qualified.
Right.
With William Blair? William Blair couldn't guarantee that because they're a third party. They're a third party.
But I will tell you that both of those firms came back to me and said, because I said the board was impressed by both of your presentations. They said, well, if we need to make this deal together for the board to feel comfortable, we can put something together for MB and Blair to participate, or we just go with one firm. So we have options out
there. Well, there were other things available to reduce the rates.
Right.
Did you have a chance to see
that website?
Yeah, I didn't look at the website, but I was taking copious notes. Right. But that's the question. Is there other avenues in which we could lower the rate? Because once you lower the rate,
then
obviously. The other key factor that Patrick and I learned is that the board needs to give, in my opinion, so we have to seek this, we have to have flexibility because of changing interest rates. Because you don't get your interest rates set until the day you float the bonds. And the bottom line is that if they went up, then suddenly that's going to impact what you can afford.
So
whatever recommendation and approval comes out, I feel that it's pertinent that we have the board provide the flexibility that's necessary. And that's what they did in 13, so it's not like it can't be done. The IFA, Illinois Finance Authority, you can sell bonds through them, and they will actually give you a lower rate. That was what District 113 did. So they got a few basis points. How much, they didn't really say.
Yeah, it was just another haircut off the Fed tax.
Yeah, I know the guys.
So, Joe, one of the other pieces that I may have heard you say is that you would want the board to give administration the flexibility to lock in the rates once you guys determine that we're moving forward.
What's going to happen is
would be March, so we're a long ways away from locking things in.
So say we do an approval in January. Well, that approval, if it's concrete, and we're saying go get 8 million, go get 7 million in borrowings,
mm-hmm.
and it turns out that rates go down, and you're like, for the same amount of money, we could borrow 8.5,
mm-hmm.
9. Do you have the flexibility to do that? I would want to give you that flexibility. And the reverse is true. Rates go up, and you're like, well, what happens? We may be down to 6. We're fortunate. We have enough in our fund that we can provide the flexibility based on the market. You have to be market ready, market mm-hmm. flexibility.
Mm-hmm.
We need to do that because come that day, you need some. I mean, it would be some print within some guidelines. It won't be open ended.
Well, one of my thoughts as you're discussing this though is that we have these. You know, we're going out to bid. These bids aren't due back until February, March. Mm-hmm. I don't think I can go out and borrow money unless we make a commitment for these additions. I won't even know what the price is going to come back in or anything else.
Well, yeah, we have to have an approval that we're moving forward with the 16 classrooms and then a guidance on the funding.
That's correct.
With parameters hopefully not as tight as some people want, not as loose as others, somewhere in the middle that gives you flexibility. To me, I tie the flexibility to the cost of funds. Because at the end of the day, if we can afford $300,000, whatever the magic number is, then that's the number you're pegged to. You can't go more than that. That's it. So at the end of the day, if rates go down and suddenly you could borrow 9.5, but the board says, we wanted you at 7.5. We're giving you leeway of an extra million if rates go down. That's a good guidance to you. That's a parameter that I would find acceptable. Would I give you 1.5 million? Maybe I do, but I don't think the rates will move that much where it really matters. And the reverse is true. Suddenly rates shoot up 100 basis points. Now you're only able to borrow 5 million. And if you don't have the ability to do that, then we got to get back here, we got to vote, and then we got to change how we're going to fund it. I don't think that's a good way to do business. I mean, we give you guidance within that. And that's what this other board did. So it's not like I'm coming up with a unique scenario here.
Sure.
But you have to be nimble in the market. If we're not going to let you be nimble, then things could occur where, and I'm for allowing you to do, you know what, rates are good today, 3 million, because that's what we need in our draw schedule. Now, 5 months later, something shifts, our draw schedule shifts, rates go down, or there's something in the marketplace that the professionals are telling you you need to make a decision soon, that you have the nimbleness, the flexibility to do that. That would be the direction I want to finance.
So I would hope that at the next finance committee that we would spend a majority of our time back on this topic one more time. We'll try to keep everything else off of that agenda and for you to spend the majority of your time. And maybe I may recommend that we start this at 6 just for one more session where we spend an enormous amount of time or a larger amount of time on this topic itself so you guys can ask.
So at that meeting, Joe, do you think it would be helpful if we get a ceiling interest
That's what I'm thinking. We need to know what that number is.
We need to know where you would feel comfortable with a P&I payment at that.
I'd like to see if MB can give you some feedback at all on, especially
on step rates.
On step rates. Because I don't want to suddenly go out and find out because we're below, a certain threshold that the rates are different. Although their presentation wasn't like that. But I'd also give you a chance to have a conversation, and they'll understand that that's a negotiation.
Okay. So we'll have that done. We should be wrapping this one up so everybody can have a moment before the regular board meeting starts.
Oh, this is the fun stuff.
I know. We got the three guys who love this stuff more than anything else.
Pretty much. The only other thing, I just want to make sure that 25% is an important number. I know that ties back to the bond ratings. So, I don't want to be dropping below that number. So,
we're going to. If you're going to be using $7 to $9 million out of fund balance, you will go below that 25. But that was that 25
was board
policy.
That's board policy.
That's not state. That's not feds. That's anything. That's a board policy. And I'm not sure how many years ago you guys that policy was put in place.
But wasn't that based on the recommendation by FASB?
No, that was based upon the board's concern of accumulation of excessive, what they determined or they termed as excessive fund balances. That's what drove that conversation.
I can sworn though.
You're right.
What are the best practices?
Oh, listen.
And I thought that's the 25% was born off some discussion that we had about.
You asked me what would be the bottom that you would feel comfortable with in terms of fund balances and ISIS mold. I'm a fiscal conservative. I'll go wherever I can.
75%.
But 25% is the least that I would want to go. Now, that was also a conversation, really, that wasn't around these proposed additions either. I mean, now we're talking about taking one asset and buying another asset. My conversations were, sorry, but that was really driven by a levy conversation. And that's why we were directed to create a policy or a procedure, a policy around that particular level of accumulation.
And I think an important thing to remember, the district has only gone into those fund balances twice, and both were anticipated. Both, one was the abatement, and the other one was
$250,000 for some, I believe, one-time expenditure capital projects.
So, Bob, as another data point, can you tell me, outside of the board policy of 25%, because people wanted to feel warm and fuzzy, is there a way that you can come up with some analysis or such that tells us what the fund balance is shouldn't be to maintain the ratings that we have today?
Well, that, and I've already discussed this with the accountants, and this has to do with taking a cash asset, a liquid asset, and purchasing capital assets. It's not like we are using them to fund structural deficits.
Right.
This is truly one time or, an expenditure over a couple of year periods. So, those numbers kind of.
Well, Bob, when we asked them, they talked about that $7 to $9 million would keep us in the highest rating, still keep us within the highest rating because of exactly what Bob's saying. you're moving it to another asset. Right. You're not spending it on some deficit.
And that's why we have to be careful not to go to that level.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Because we have to be cognizant of the phase two level
yep.
so that we have
it's
some
important.
Skin in the game. Because you're not going to build them up anymore. The balance.
Okay.
But we'll make sure that this is a long, if you guys are up for it, if you want to start at 6 o'clock on that December, I can't remember the date.
9th.
We can move it to a 6 so you have an extended period of time, and we'll bring those pieces that you're asking for, Patrick, and that you're asking for.
Okay. So we can have that conversation. You'll let me know when I return.
Yep.
All right.
Take a quick break.